When you think of gospel music, one thing that comes to mind is the powerhouse message of the song. How best to deliver that than none other than a powerhouse singer? And we've got one on the line today, Sue Dodge, next.
Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
So she's got a long history in gospel music going back to probably Sue Chenault, Spear family. We'll talk about all of that, but we know her and love her today as Sue Dodge, and she's with me now. And I love it when you take the stage because I know you're going to knock it out.
Well, thank you very, very much. I've always been known as the little power singer. And I don't mind that. I was raised in Arkansas, and we just learned to open up and let her fly.
Is there something about that? Because it seems like in gospel music, more than any other genre, you hear about that kind of a singer. Have you ever gotten either criticized or people come to you with interest like, wow, that's just such power behind your voice? I know Wendy Bagwell referred to it as leather lungs, right?
Yeah, exactly. I've been called all of those things. You know what? It's mixed. Sometimes people will say, where does that power come from? And then somebody will, they'll come up and they'll be a little nicer and they'll say something like, you don't need a microphone.
That's right.
And, all of it is complimentary. I don't take it wrong. But you know what? When I was growing up, I just was taught to just give it all you had.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's the voice that God gave me. And I always knew if I took this mouth and used it to glorify God, it would be a good thing.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, and probably, can you sing that a little bit softer, Sue?
Yeah, right. Oh, sure.
Yeah, right. Okay, so Arkansas, I guess, is that where you're born and raised?
It was. My parents, my mom still lives there, and I was raised right out of Little Rock, Arkansas, and I started singing at a really young age in the fifth grade. My mom and dad bought me a piano because my brother started taking me to all-night sings in Little Rock. Mm. And it just got in my bones, and I loved it. And then I started to sing with my minister of music and his wife in a trio, and we traveled every weekend. And, of course, the rest was history. It was in my blood, and I never got away from it.
So you said your brother took you?
My brother would take me on dates with him, too, and all night sing on Friday night at the Robinson Auditorium in Little Rock, Arkansas. And he kind of introduced me to Southern gospel. And I would come home with pieces of music, and I would not go to sleep until I learned them.
Wow.
And, of course, back then, there was not many places for women.
Sure.
You had the Goodmans and Vestal, but she was family. You had the Spears, and they had one girl's position, and that was filled. And then you had the Lefevers, and that was pretty much it back then. But God knew where I was going. So.
The Spear family came, I guess, a little bit later, but let's go back. You were traveling, you said, with your music minister and his wife?
Yes. The minister of music in my church and his wife started a trio, and I was actually the alto singer. His wife was the soprano.
Uh-huh.
And I traveled with them, and then I spent my senior year of high school entering beauty pageants, and I was in Miss America preliminaries, and of course singing was my talent, and I always would win that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to an all-day singing and met up with an old friend, Linda Robinson, who was at that point singing with the Spear family. She said, what are you going to do now that you are not in school? And I said, well, I'm going to broadcast school. And she said, oh, you need to be singing. She had just started with the Spears. And so she said, hey, I know someone starting a group. So she gave me the name of Paul and Ann Downing.
Mm.
And I was the first girl that they hired with the newly formed Downings.
That's right.
And I started there in 1969. And then I was with them for 18 months. And my dream was always to be with the Spear family. And 18 months later, God fulfilled that dream, and I got to sing with them for the next 5 years.
So with the Downings, was that just, that was a total different landscape, total different ball game than even traveling with your music minister and his wife, I imagine, right?
Oh, my goodness, yes. We just traveled on weekends. And when I started with the Downings, I had to move away from home for the first time and move to Nashville and just went on the road. I mean, it was like no other life I had ever known. It was quite a shock for this little girl from Arkansas who had barely spent the night away from home.
And
was pretty sheltered, and, you know, I'd get out there, but I instantly loved it. They used to say, I think it was Bob McKenzie with the Benson Company that said one time that there were two people that probably ought to they ought to pay people to let them sing because they love it so much. And that was me and Roger Wild.
Well, you can tell there's a big smile on your face every time you grab the mic. And we're talking to Sue Dodge. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. By the way, hearing music from your latest project, Through It All, and there is a Best of Sue Dodge project that's out from the Gaither Organization, video and a CD combo pack, and lots of great highlights from that homecoming series as well. And you're hearing it here on Daniel Britt and Friends.
In this modern day of living, my, how things have changed. People often get religion, but their heart remains the same. They go to church, they testify.
Yes, I was saved by amazing grace.
You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. The guest today is Sue Dodge. Of course, you probably didn't need me to tell you that. There are times when you watch a television show or you listen to the radio and you wait for the name to come on the screen or the DJ to tell you who is singing. But there are other names that you don't need to be told. You know exactly who they are, and today's guest is that, Sue Dodge. And we're talking about, let's see, the late 60s, the Downings. I remember talking to Ann Downing and going step by step through their history, and you were a good part of that, of their history. What did you learn with the Downings in particular?
Well, you know, it was an interesting... I was there 18 months, and I was hired as the alto singer, and then they found out that I sang a little higher than her, so we were always switching off. But you know what? It was the place that I got my feet wet.
Right, right.
And learned to sing as a group, and I'd been in a group, but it's a little different mm-hmm. when you get into a quartet and learned about the road and learned people, and then, of course, it gave me the opportunity to meet the Spear family, and then when they asked me to come on board with them, I honestly thought I'd died and gone to heaven. I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it because I wanted to. And I tell you, those next 5 years with the Spear family was a training ground for me in so many ways. I learned a lot with the Downings, not to discount that mm-hmm. at all. I was mm-hmm. so grateful because they're the ones that gave me my start, you know, and I'm very grateful for that. But when I got with the Spears, there was so much. They did everything with such finesse and such class. And I learned a lot about singing and reading music. I already read a little bit, but I learned all about that. And then I learned spiritually, Brock Spear just really fed into my life. Mm. And you know what? It was the greatest training ground that any person could ever have dreamed of.
Did you travel much with Mom and Dad Spear?
You know what? They were already in heaven when I joined. They passed away in 66 and 7, I think.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't join the Spears until 70. And I sang with them for 4.5 years till I got married. Just the stories, wonderful stories of Mom and Dad, and of course they laid the foundation there.
Yeah.
And you know, I tell Ben, I said, as much as I hated you for all the times that you told me I was doing it wrong, because I had to play as well. Back then, the soprano singer had to play piano when Ben stood up.
Oh, yeah.
And so he would sit there and beat out rhythms on my shoulders, and it would make me mad. But here I am today as a pastor's wife, leading a choir, directing a band in my own church when I'm there. Uh-huh. And I tell him, you made a piano player out of me. He said, well, I'm glad to hear that. I thought you'd hate me forever. And I said, well, just for a minute.
Yeah, well, there is a lot of discipline that comes to mind when I think of Ben in particular and the Spear family. And you talked about finesse and all that. And the reason I was asking about Mom and Dad is if you weren't with them, and you weren't, so it's a good question.
Sure passed it down to their sons. I mean, we went off of Harold Lane arrangements. We didn't just, a lot of groups, and I say that loosely because I've never been in but two groups, but they'll just grab a part and go.
Yeah, right, right.
That was never the way with the Spears. We would go in. On our days on the road, they would get a room at the hotel, and we would go in, and we would work on these arrangements that Harold Lane had so intricately written out, and we would go with those, and we did not sing those until they were perfectly known, and we knew all of our parts, and you didn't get by. You didn't get by with just sloughing off.
Yeah. Did you ever?
But, you know, it helped so much.
Did you ever feel like that maybe you were criticized for taking the music a little too seriously?
In the Spears?
Yeah, not by the Spears, but by maybe outsiders or other groups. Maybe you guys, you know what?
They always thought we, you know, everybody respected the Spears, and that was just great for anyone who sang with them as well, because that was, it's like being with the Gaithers, it's almost a stamp of approval that, okay, you've made the grade. Mm. But, you know, people would say, wow, those arrangements, you know, goodness gracious, that's so slick. But there was a class to what they did, down to the way they wanted us to dress and present ourselves. And you can never argue with that. And it made me now, as a pastor's wife and a minister of music in my own church and even as a singer on stage, I learned how to do it with class and finesse, and there's so many other words I could name. And I'll be forever grateful for that, because I did take it seriously. It wasn't something that you could just, like, walk on stage and flip a switch and do it.
Right.
Not only musically, but spiritually, Brock kept us straight on, you know?
Yeah. And classic sounds from the Spear family that lives to this day, for instance, like I Never Shall Forget the Day. That's a song that I'm sure you can't go too many places where people don't remind you of that song or want to hear that song. Or
absolutely.
Yeah, you're known for it.
Yeah, we called it back then the Sugar Stick.
right, yeah.
That was the Sugar Stick. And, you know, so many things that I sang with them, but we did that on the first Gaither video that I was a part of. And I was counting up the other day. That is on at least four different videos.
Hmm.
Now, we did it live. We did it in the studio, and then we did it overseas, and then we did it at Red Rock. And there's just so many places. But that's a song that Dad Spear wrote in, I believe, 1928 or 23, something like that. And we kind of renovated it when I came with the group, because they'd always wanted to do it with the powerhouse singer.
Uh-huh.
And so they said, you know, take it away, and we could hardly go a night without singing that and The King Is Coming, because that was one of the first things we learned. But yes, that still to this day, people remember me and they'll say, they'll just walk up and that's all they'll say. I never shall forget the day.
It's Sue Dodge on our guest line today on Daniel Britt and Friends.
Long years ago,
Went out in sin.
I had no hope.
No peace within.
Down on my knees.
In agony.
I prayed to Jesus,
and He gladly set me free.
I never shall forget the day.
Sinner, come
to Jesus now.
At His dear feet.
Just humbly bow.
Confess to Him.
Your every sin. He'll save and cleanse
you, give you peace and joy within. Yeah.
Powerhouse vocalist Sue Dodge. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends talking about, and you mentioned this a little bit at the beginning about being a woman in that day where it was kind of hard to get your foot in the door. But once you were there, I'm sure the culture started changing. Obviously, it did through the decades. Thinking outside of gospel music, just in the society, just in the social aspect or the cultural aspect of that day, the 60s, 70s, I'm sure you were witnessing all this stuff in real time, not only with civil rights, but women's rights. And what was it like as far as doing what you do, singing, but obviously reaching an audience, reaching the people where they live, living in those times? Was it a challenge?
Sometimes, yes. You know, back then, there weren't that many. I say back then, it seems like it's hundreds of years ago, but in the 60s, 70s, there weren't that many mixed groups. It was a quartet world. And it was very interesting for me to just watch that whole thing unfold. And then about the time, I can't say that I was ever discriminated against or anything like that, nothing like that. But you weren't taken as seriously as the men were.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, because there weren't that many of you. However, being with the Spears and the Downings, that gained you a certain amount of respect, and they knew that you were someone that knew what they were doing, and in the case of both of them, that you were serious about what you were doing. And that's what I always say to people and to young artists even. I will say, you know what? Whatever you do, do it with all your might, because God has placed you there. So make a mark where you are, no matter where it is. If you never get past your local church, make a mark where you are and let God open the doors. And that's what I felt like happened in my life. I kept my life good. I was passionate about what I did, passionate about my relationship with God. And I felt like God just honored that and opened the doors one at a time. I would never have ever believed that this little girl from Arkansas would ever have been able to do the things, go the places, sing to the people that I sung to, and experience the things that I did. I mean, and I never would have, except that God had a plan for my life.
So we're talking, if we're talking through the 70s, at what point did you get married?
I met my husband in 73 when the Spears went on a 4th of July weekend. We were coming back from California, and the man who was promoting us lost his building for the concert, and he changed it to a church. And the pastor was out of town, and the gorgeous, black-haired, blue-eyed, gorgeous man named Amos Dodge was the associate. And he introduced the group that night, and this is the truth, honestly. He noticed me during the concert, and beforehand his friend had said, you should see this girl out there with the Spears. And he said, I'm not interested in a gospel singer. You can have her. So in the middle of the concert, I noticed him because he was sitting back there, and he was gorgeous, and it was the 4th of July, and that was in the days of colored coats, and he had on a red coat, I'll never forget. Uh-huh. And I leaned over to Jeannie Johnson, and I said, look at the guy in the red coat. Well, evidently, about the same time, he turned to his friend and said, I changed my mind. You can't have her. I she's mine. Well, after the this is the truth, Daniel. I am telling you the truth. Put my hand up. If you could see me right now, I'm saying this is the truth before God.
Yeah, right.
He came to the water fountain. We met. We talked for a minute. And he said, come listen to a group that we're trying out a bass player with our youth group, because he was a youth pastor. And he said, come down. So he put his arm out, and I walked down the middle aisle of Trinity Church in San Antonio, Texas. And somewhere between the back of the auditorium and the front of the auditorium, he turned around and stopped and looked at me with those clear blue eyes and said, let's do this for real one time soon.
Oh, wow.
And he literally proposed to me 5 minutes after we met. 2 nights later, he brought me an engagement ring to Dallas. We were closing the Stamps Baxter Music School that night. He brought me an engagement ring. We got officially engaged. I didn't take that one. Yeah, but we got officially engaged a month later, and we're married 7 months and 8 days later.
Wow.
This year, in February 2012, we will celebrate our 38th wedding anniversary.
Nice.
So it took.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it took you from, well, I guess, Texas to the Washington, D.C. area where you're at now.
Well,
right?
Actually, when I got married, I moved to Texas. He was still on staff at that church.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pioneered a church in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. 33 years ago. We came here, kind of kids not drive behind the ears, as my mom would say.
Mm-hmm.
And but we just felt like that we were to come here and start a church, and we did. And we're still pastoring the same church, and God has allowed us to do some wonderful things. We do an Easter sunrise service on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial that last year drew 8,000 people at 6:30
wow.
in the morning.
Wow.
So, and I still travel, and I still, you know, I have a daughter and grandkids now. So
nice. So at what point, were you married and still traveling?
No, I left the Spears about 10 days before I got married. And then for a while I did nothing but just, you know, be the youth pastor's wife. And then I started to travel on the weekends with my husband. And then I started a solo career again. And then mm-hmm. really it kicked back in when Bill Gaither started his homecoming series. And he called me and said, "I know that you think you've retired from this, but you can't."
Right.
And he kind of pulled me out. He said, "Sue, that voice has got to be heard. Come back, you know."
Yeah.
And so I said, "Well, for you, I'll do that." And the rest was history. I said, "I thought I'd be home raising grandkids. God had another idea."
Right, right. Absolutely.
And I'm really glad.
Absolutely. Well, let's look then. And by the way, we're talking to Sue Dodge. And the history that you have is amazing. And then when you look at the fact that you guys have been in church ministry for so long and the marriage has lasted so long, you obviously give God credit here. Do you have any secrets of the trade, though? I mean, what's the secret to longevity in all that you've done so far?
Commitment. Knowing what you're called to do and going for it. I have had to obviously adjust because I'm a pastor's wife, but my church is fabulous in that for a long time they didn't know what I did until the Gaither thing came along, because I just
right.
would be gone on a weekend, and I don't know what they thought I was doing, but anyway, I was out singing. And then I had a daughter, and I put my career on hold for a time. And I really feel like that having that draw to the local church, that tie that keeps you grounded, and then knowing what your priorities are. I was determined. My mom said to me early on after I had my daughter, she said, "Honey, you have one chance to raise your daughter. And if you miss that, you will miss it. It will never come back to you." And I thought, yes. So three different times I took a sabbatical from singing solo ministry because I felt like it was more important that I be home and invest in my daughter. And, of course, when we started the church, my husband needed me because I played piano and led worship. And I'm reaping the benefits of that. When Tara went off to school, to college, I remember her getting in the car, that's my daughter, and mm-hmm. she got back out of the car, and she leaned over the car, and the Gaither thing had just started. And she leaned over the car, and I'm crying because she's going back to school, and she said, "Hey, Mom, you remember how you put everything on hold for me and Dad so you could raise me and help Dad with the church? Well, Mom, it's your time now. Go for it." And she got in her car and drove off to college.
Wow.
And I tell you what, I look at her today. She is now our worship leader on staff at our church. And I look at her, and she's the most amazing mom, the most amazing woman of God. And I look at her, and I think, you know what? Priorities were the whole thing. If I had just pressed on through and not realized that my responsibility was there to her as well. And I had a lot of things, a lot of hats to wear and balls to juggle. But you know what? I think it's priorities, and I think it's staying grounded. When you travel so much, Daniel, and you're on the road all the time, you start believing you are church.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
You know, because you're never where you're fed, because you're always the one giving out.
Yeah.
But my husband was wonderful. He was always more ambitious for me than I was. Never once was he ever intimidated by, I'm married to Sue Dodge, you know. Mm-hmm. But he kept me grounded, kept me focused. And in my tough moments, and I've had some, my tough moments, we would come back to what is the call and what are we supposed to do. And God has restored my music every single time when I have taken a sabbatical, done what he said, and then I would come back to it.
Sue Dodge is our guest today. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends, and we've got some wonderful music we're listening to, including the Best Of project that's now out, which really goes back through the Homecoming series and highlights Sue's highlights in that series. And we've got it now on Daniel Britt and Friends.
Oh, what a happy time that should have been. Jesus is coming after me. I hear him calling me away from this old world forever to stay. And when I take my Savior's hand in that blessed promised land, I'll shout and sing through the endless ages. Oh, what a happy day. Oh, what a happy day.
What a happy day
that will be when we get up there. What a happy day.
What a happy day
when we climb those golden stairs. We'll meet with those who've gone before, James and John and a million more. What a happy time that should have been. Oh, what a happy day. And when I walk into heaven fair, I see my blessed Savior there. He'll place a crown upon my head, give me a robe of white to wear. And I'll walk on streets of purest gold, and I'll live forever and not grow old. I'll shout and sing through the endless ages. Oh, what a happy day.
Oh, what a happy day.
Listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Sue Dodge is our guest today. As we've talked about, Sue, your career, this is a question that it's not to throw stones either at today's culture or to throw stones at the previous culture generation. But when you were traveling with the Spear family, for example, did you feel like, for instance, we use words like relevant today, like what we sing about, what we write about, what we preach about has to be relevant. It's got to hit home. It's got to meet them where they are. And I think it's probably always been true, but is that a new word, or in the Spear family, were you looking for relevancy in choosing your music, for instance?
I don't believe as much then as we were, as we do now, you know, with everybody, oh, we've got to have a focus for the project.
Yeah.
We looked for songs. I remember when we'd all sit on the bus and look for songs. There would be songs that we felt strongly about, that we felt like we could communicate to the people based on where we are. And I specifically remember, you know, we all have grown up with Jesus is coming one day.
Right.
And but I remember when Bill Gaither flew down and gave us that little piece of paper that had "The King is Coming" scribbled on it. And we learned that in Brock's basement one day, and we took it on the road the first weekend, and I have never seen anything before or since like that.
Mm.
I believe, you know, you're starting to realize that here we were, and that was in the 70s, early 70s, and people are realizing, you know, we're closer to the coming of the Lord, and we no man knows the day or the hour, but here we are all these years later, and he hasn't come yet, but we're still working toward that. And I think what they did and what I've learned to do is it can be relevant, and I'm not looking for, like, songs that talk about abortion or songs that talk about breast cancer. And mm-hmm. not to say that's not good, because that touches a chord, because so many people are dealing with stuff.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, but I look for songs now that are relevant to where I am and what God has brought me through. And that's what my Through It All project was about, because I had some surgery, and it took my voice for 8 months with no promise. Doctors made me no promise that I would ever sing again. And I got to tell you, that's a scary thing when that's what you do. But it's in those moments that you realize that the relevance of your life is not about what you do, it's who you are. And if I never sang again, would I have anything to offer? And the answer was yes, I would. Did I want to sing again? Oh, I begged God.
Yeah, right.
To let me sing again. But I think today we're all about trying to make sure that we're politically correct, we're this, that, and the other. And I honestly believe, and maybe this is my age and my experience, but I believe if we tell them about the love and acceptance and power of Jesus Christ, then we've covered it. That Jesus is all accepting. He loves us in spite of our stuff. But with the Spirit, they just thought about what's going to minister to people. And I think that's kind of where I got mine in a lot of ways, but also through experience of life.
Sue Dodge here on Daniel Britt and Friends.
I've had many tears and sorrows, and I've had questions for tomorrow. There have been times I didn't know right from wrong. But in every situation, God gave blessed consolation that my trials come to only make me strong. Through it all, through it all, I've learned to trust in Jesus. I've learned to trust in God.
Like the Daniel Britt and Friends page on Facebook, tweet at Britt and Friends on Twitter, or simply visit the full site at danielbritt.com.
Listening to Daniel Britt and Friends with our guest today, Sue Dodge. And in the last segment, we were talking about some issues that you went through vocally recently, where you had a procedure or surgery that was done. And you said it took 8 months for you to fully recover, with no promise that you were even going to recover as far as singing is concerned.
Right.
So in the 8 month time frame that went by, obviously there's some pretty black and white concerns you may have had. You know, will I have a voice? Will I be able to sing? But take us through some of the emotions or some of the thought processes you went through week 3, week 8, week 13, yeah. You know, of
Golly.
This process. what were you thinking?
I had a ruptured disc in my spine, and I had the surgery 7 years before on another disc. But this one was a little more extensive, and I came out of the surgery fine. The surgery was successful. 3 weeks, maybe two to 3 weeks into it, one morning, I yelled for my husband down the hall, and I realized I wasn't quite recovering as quickly as I should have. I yelled for him, and when I did, my voice cut off, and I realized I was in trouble.
Hmm.
I, long and short of it, as I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, I have good news and bad news. We didn't cut anything, but we stretched every nerve in your vocal cords because they go through the front of your neck, moved my vocal cords to the side. And he said, and by the way, you have the most developed vocal cords for a woman I have ever seen. I said, oh, do you think? So anyway, I realized that I had lost my voice. They sent me to a doctor that was a voice coach, and she was, you know, all this stuff. If you got to grieve this loss. And I just was like, no. And I remember leaning across the table one day after several weeks of not being able to sing, and realizing that, and he said, I make you no promises. I think that this will regenerate, but I cannot make you a promise. Hmm. Well, you can imagine, I went through every emotion that you might go through if you had cancer.
Sure.
You're angry, you deny it, you're depressed, you're emotional, you're just, you know, I was just ticked off. I was like, yeah. God, but what do I do? The questions of, this is all I've ever done. I mean, I love this. And I would go to church. I couldn't even sing and worship, and I couldn't raise my hands because I had the nerves in my arm were damaged, and I couldn't raise my arms, so I couldn't even raise my hands in worship. I mean, it was crazy. And I remember laying across my kitchen table one day, and I'd been reading my Bible that morning, and I just leaned across the table, and I said, God, if I never sing again, I still choose to trust you. But you've got some explaining to do.
Yes, right.
And I don't know if anybody else talks to God that way.
Right.
And it was like, you know, people were saying, you don't, maybe God doesn't want you to sing again. And I just put my hand out and said, no, I do not accept that.
Right.
But, you know, and everybody had the answer of how to do this. And God spoke to me three things that day. He said, stay close to the source. And I knew what that meant. Go to church even if you can't sing and you're frustrated. Read the word. Stay positive and know that I am still God. Hmm. Number two, he said, stop talking about your problems. Everybody wanted to know the gory details.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I said, okay. And the third thing was start calling things that aren't as though they were. And I knew what that meant.
Hmm.
Start planning to sing again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would go to the piano, and every day I might have one note.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have a 2-octave range, and when I started, I had 3 notes. That was all.
Mm.
And every day or every week I'd get another one. And this happened in September, and then Bill called in October, can you sing yet? No. Well, can you come and just give me your smile on the video? Well, that was difficult to sit there and watch everybody else do
right.
what you want to do.
Right.
But I knew that I knew God was up to something, and I just kept on. Finally, I just set a goal. I'm going to sing. It may be low, but at Christmas Eve, I'm going to sing. And a little lady in my church died that loved me dearly, and she said, whenever I die, please will you sing Amazing Grace? And I had not sung one note. By this time, it was from September to December, and I sang a very low version of Amazing Grace at her funeral. And then on Christmas Eve, I sang All Is Well. I sounded like Linda Randall. You know? But I was serving the enemy notice that you can't keep a good girl down.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going to do this. And it was February, finally, that I went back. I did a Gaither video, and he called and said, can you sing? What do you want to sing? And I said, well, of the things you sent me, the thing that I can sing, it's in the range for me to sing, is He Was There All the Time, which is on that DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, can you tell a little of the story? And I just basically said, you know, God did a miracle in me, but first I had to lay it down, and I had to say, if I never sing again, You are still Lord in my life, and You never left me. Even though I went through a struggle, You were always there. You were there all the time. You just wanted me to ask You to come and help me through it. And the next thing that happened is I started planning for an album, which is the Through It All album. And this is now 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I started planning for that album, and I went to my computer one day. And somebody had just said to me the Sunday before, maybe God doesn't want you to sing again. And I said no, but then I got home and it took root in my heart.
Yeah.
And I said, what if He doesn't want me to sing? And I didn't hear anything. So I went to my computer and I started pulling up all the groups that I like. And I started just listening on the computer to Southern Gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things I pulled up, and it still makes me teary to think about it, Daniel, it's amazing. I pulled up Greater Vision because I love to hear them sing, love their harmonies, love their songs. And the first thing, as you can well imagine, that came, I mean, it was almost like it had a neon sign on it. And it was, God wants to hear you sing.
Yeah, it's a great song.
And I just collapsed over my computer and cried my eyes out and said, "Thank you, Lord. That's a promise, and I'm gonna hold on to it." Well, I went and did, in the end of February, I did two concerts back-to-back at a seniors conference in Texas. And that was the first time that I had sung at all. And it was about a year until I could finally, one time I went back to this church, and this friend of mine who was a pastor said, "You didn't sing, I Never Shall Forget the Day." And I said, "I can't." And he said, "Didn't you tell me you'd been living in fear of not getting this voice back?" And he looked at the sound man and he said, "Hit, I Never Shall Forget the Day. She's going to sing it." And I sang it like I had never been away from it.
Wow.
And, you know, I still have to be very careful and treat my voice a little nicer than I ever did.
Right.
But here we are 4 years later, and you know what? I didn't get the top two notes back. But who knows that?
Yeah.
I am singing still, and Tara says, "Mom," and my husband Amos says the same. He says, "There's something different about your voice that's better than it was before." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Thank you, Lord." Because, but you know what? You just got to still know He is Lord.
Absolutely.
He's got a plan.
And appropriately titled Through It All, the project with Sue Dodge, and you and your husband there serving, and again, just... so faithful there in Washington, D.C., in that metro area. And I'm going to come to your church one day, okay?
Oh, I want you to.
and
that
I want
to be so fun.
Tell me about the opportunities being there. Obviously, you could embrace that as being, hey, we're in our nation's capital and wave a flag and go to the museums, or you could say, yuck, we're under politics everywhere around us. You know, you might step in it. So how do you deal with Washington? How do you deal with all that goes on, the dynamics?
You know what? It's fabulous. It's really fabulous. I remember when we first came here one night, Tara was just a baby, and Amos said to me, they were doing the Peace Court talks when Clinton was in office, and and he said, "You know what? National news has happened in downtown. Let's go down there." So we loaded the baby in the car, and we went down there, and just as we drove by the White House, they stopped the traffic, and we were the front car, and out comes Menachem Begin and the president, and wow. We got to see all of that.
Wow.
And, you know, that also has given me some opportunities. I sang for President Reagan, and he greeted me and said, "You rendered me speechless."
Mm.
And then I sang for Bush Sr. and for Vice President Quayle, those kinds of things that I've been... privilege to be a part of. And then, you know, occasionally you'll look up and see a senator in your church. But you know what? It's
sure.
No different. People live the same in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
We just happen to be living in the hub of the world.
Right, exactly.
And we know that we're here for a purpose. And one of the things was that Easter sunrise service, that we can touch our nation's capital with the message of the gospel one time of year and make a difference. And that's what we wanted to do. And then we're just the all-American local church every other time, and anybody's welcome. And we're very international. I think we have 17 nations represented in our church.
Wow.
And it's just the best people in the world. And you know what? People in politics need Jesus just like everybody else.
Absolutely.
Sometimes more.
Yeah.
He said, "Tell them when."
Oh,
at your website, which is simply suedodge.com. Folks can follow you there and connect with you, get the projects that you have, the best of projects and the new one. And boy, it's and book you, right? You can. Are you?
Oh, absolutely.
So you're still available to travel.
I still go out and do concerts and women's conferences. I speak and I sing and I just have a great time. But the best part is seeing the people and getting to sing to them.
Well, we remember your history with fondness, and obviously what you're doing today is still very impactful. And we just appreciate the time you've taken with us today to catch up with Sue Dodge.
Well, thank you very, very much. And just to everybody listening, I love this music. I love you all, and I'm grateful for all of these years of being able to do what I do and then have people so wonderfully receive it. Thank you, Daniel, for all you do to get the word out. So I love talking to you.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews again online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.